From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
Have you ever grown mushrooms, or perhaps they've just grown themselves in different parts of your garden at different moments of the season, and you've wondered why there and why then? I know I do. I'm fascinated by fungi, and today's guest is here to encourage us to try cultivating some edible ones, and to go take a mushroom walk, too, to get to meet some of the incredible diversity out there. More in a moment, but first, these messages.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com. Underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, the first independently owned farm-based seed company proudly serving organic gardeners and farmers with 100% organic and non-GMO vegetable, herb, and flower seeds. HighMowingSeeds.com/awaytogarden.
John Michelotti is a self-described mushroom guy and has studied fungi with some of the country's top mycologists. On his family farm in Big Indian, New York, he cultivates indoor and outdoor mushrooms as owner of Catskill Fungi, which provides guided mushroom classes, cultivation courses, private consultations, and he even creates mushroom health extracts. John is also part of the Amazon Myco-Renewal Project, researching the utilization of fungi to remediate oil spills in the Amazon rainforest. And best of all, for local listeners of Robin Hood Radio and visitors to my May 11th, 2019 Open Garden Day, John will be teaching mushroom growing and leading a mushroom walk as part of our festivities. So more on that with the transcript of the show. And hello, John. How are you?
Good. Hello. Thanks for having me on the show today.
Yeah. So I've heard you say, first I'm just going to ask you, you know, it's like a potato-potato thing. I always worry when I say fungi, is it supposed to be fungi or fungi? Or what do you say?
Yeah, it's pretty interchangeable. I say fungi. It's quite interchangeable as far as that goes.
Okay. So I've heard you say that your mission is to spread the information about the benefits that fungi, as I say it, have to offer. Like, for example, some of the benefits.
They're really pretty amazing. I mean, when I teach medicinal mushroom workshops, it's the focus is on people and the role they can play in your health, but I also touch on their ecological functions in our gardens, in our forests, and how by partnering with fungi, they can really help to create healthy ecosystems.
So that Amazon project that you're involved in, that would be like a very large scale example of that, I suppose.
Yes, and it's kind of ongoing research where we're looking at how fungi can remediate oil spills or clean up toxins within soils and within the environment.
Wow.
And they do so with their digestive system. Basically, the way fungi grow is in an interconnected network called mycelium. And this mycelium is basically, you can think about it like the roots of the fungi. And the fungi are there existing as mycelium 365 days a year, whether we're seeing mushrooms or not. And the way they break down the dead wood in the forest, the way they crawl underneath the soil is through a digestive system that's like ours, but opposite, where we take in food. Enzymes are released in our stomachs to digest the food, and then we absorb the nutrients. Well, the fungi are doing this through their mycelium and their tips by externalizing their enzymes, which break down the lignin, the cellulose, and hemicellulose, the building blocks of wood, and then they absorb those nutrients through those same hyphal tips into the mycelium, and this is how they grow and spread throughout wood and throughout their soils. And it's only when conditions are perfect that they pool their energy together and fruit mushrooms. And that's the part that we see
right
above ground, growing out of logs and things like this.
Maybe what fascinated me most is how, or fascinates me most every year, is how certain fungi show up in similar spots at the same times of year and not in other spots. It's like they have their kind of place. Like I have this one big conifer, and around it in certain years, if the weather, I guess, is right, I get this like fairy ring of, I think they're amanitas. And, you know, there's a place just down the road from me if I walk in the maybe, or I think it's the early fall, where I see those inky caps. Yeah. And they're on one spot, but I've never seen them any, you know, I don't see them in my yard. And so you're talking about these, when the time is right, they decide to show us their fruiting bodies. But what's going on underneath is that they have a special place where each species can be happy and thrive.
Yes. And, you know, those are two really good examples of two of the functions that fungi serve within the environment. So the amanitas that you mentioned there, and that's, you know, listeners can know that one as the emoji mushroom. It's the one with the red cap, the white dots on it. It's the Super Mario Brothers mushroom, as they say. But this mushroom, even though it's poisonous to people, actually serves a lot of great benefits for the environment. So that mushroom in your yard, it has its mycelium interconnected with the roots of trees. Uh-huh. And so the tree and the fungi are exchanging nutrients in a symbiotic relationship where the fungi, through its mycelium, is mining nutrients like nitrogen, phosphorus, and water, and putting that into the tree in exchange for sugars that the tree is making through photosynthesis. So it's no surprise when those mushrooms come up again and again in those same spots.
Right.
Usually a couple days after a rain, because that mycelium and that tree are always interconnected. Kind of.
I see.
And then and then some of the other mushrooms, the coprinus, people may have seen, they're called inky caps as well.
Yes.
And they kind of they deliquesce until a black mush that was actually utilized for quills and pens, 100 years ago. But these mushrooms are generally there and sometimes next to compost, because they are tertiary decomposers. So they're breaking down things that have been broken down already.
Oh, and so that makes sense from where I see them. That makes total sense. Yep.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes you'll see those there. So yeah, it's really fascinating.
Yeah, it's like besides, you just used one of my favorite mushroom words. When I first saw those inky caps one year, many years ago, in the fall, I think, that word deliquesce, sort of melting, you know, that it kind of, and as you said, it's like a black ink, and it was long ago used as an ink, but it's just, mm-hmm. I mean, it's just a beautiful word also, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah. And so 2 years ago, I think it was, when you led a fall walk that I coordinated, I remember asking you, as I do everyone who comes to teach a workshop or whatever with me or at my place or whatever, I remember asking, I said, so, John, do you want to come an hour or two or three ahead of time and scout the site to see what is there, and, you know, before your guests come, before, you know, your attendees come, so you'll kind of have your pit stops outlined? And you were just like, no, I don't need to do that. I'd rather be surprised, Margaret. And I thought, wow, this guy's confident. And it kind of made me laugh. But I think that's because you know from all the exploration you've done in so many places, in so many seasons and whatever, that there's always, as that expression goes, fungus among us. You know, there's always something, right?
Yeah, very well said. Yes, and that's what it is I know that there are mushrooms everywhere all around us. And even just, for example, some of the unseen, we talked about mycelium being the roots of fungi in the Northeast here. And every square inch of soil, there's a mile of mycelium.
Oh, my goodness.
This is everywhere. And so it's really after a rain, you'll see different types of mushrooms. And without fail, once you train your eyes to see these mushrooms, they really start appearing everywhere, because the fungal kingdom is the second largest kingdom of living things. I mean, there are more fungi out there than there are plants and animals combined.
Wow.
So there's just so much diversity in our woods, and it's really just training your eyes to see them. And once you learn a little bit here and a little bit there, it really becomes like a scavenger hunt in the woods. And the fun is you don't have to be moving too fast or, in fact, the slower you mosey, the more you see. But then also you could be walking the same woods you've walked year after year and find new things. And that's wow. What really makes it fun.
Yeah. Well, it was very inspiring to me because, as I said, normally, if I'm going to teach something somewhere, I like want to see the lay of the land first. You know what I mean? Because I'm nervous mm-hmm. otherwise. But you were just totally confident, which was great. And the other thing that I love, is that they have each a different almost personality when the fruiting bodies do appear. They don't all look alike. We talked about the Amanita for a second, and I'll show some pictures with the transcript of the show on awaytogarden.com. And the inky caps are a different shape altogether and have this distinctive melting habit. And then there's puffballs, and then there's little tiny clusters of things that are tight on the ground, maybe on mulch or something that I sometimes get, like if I get a load of mulch. And then there's like things that look like horse hooves or other ones that look like brackets or fluted ears on the bark of trees, like such diversity of form. What's that about a little bit?
Absolutely. Each one is so different. And generally, mushrooms have evolutionized differently. They've gone from being underground sclerotia, similar to truffles, into the forms of fruiting bodies that you think of when you think mushroom, your cap and stem mushrooms, and then back to truffles and then back to fruiting bodies from stinkhorns and things like this. So really, over the millennia, we've seen different forms change evolutionarily. But when you're mushroom hunting, especially starting out, it's great because a lot of these mushrooms you can cluster into groups, just like you were doing right there. There's certain mushrooms that grow on trees that are bracket-like fungus and hoofs. And then there's other ones that grow in mulch. The one that you're talking about is called a bird's nest fungus, because when you look at it, you'll see it's a little tiny cup with maybe three or four what look like eggs in there.
Yes, that's exactly right. Yes.
So each one's a little different, but there are some basic categories that can really help you narrow down what type of mushroom it is that you're looking at. And then from there, a beginner can get a guidebook such as the Audubon's Guide to North American Mushrooms and look up, based on the category of mushroom, what it is they might have there. So, there's really a lot of diversity, not just in shape, size, color, texture, and flavors.
Right, flavors, but we're not going around and tasting the ones that we find on our walk.
Absolutely not. No way. I just got a call from a local environmental group, and they were saying, hey, we have a lot of people that ask about different types of mushrooms, and being part of the Mid-Hudson Mycological Association, I also get a lot of questions like this, and it's true. We do have deadly poisonous mushrooms in our woods here, so you do have to know what you're doing, and then really there's no easy way to do it. You have to identify your mushrooms to species. If you're interested in, edibility, there are about five easy edibles that you can really learn within the first year of mushroom hunting that are abundant in our woods, but you got to triple check them. That means you got to have three different pairs of eyes signing off saying it's the same thing. That's what I always recommend.
Triple checking. Well, until I met you, I'd never grown a single mushroom intentionally. As I said, they're all over the place in the garden. And since I've met you, thanks to your confidence and how you told me to kind of, they're everywhere, go ahead and just keep, slow down and look more carefully. So I'm meeting more of them all the time. But when I was treated to one of your outdoor mushroom growing classes, I think it was last year, it turns out that some of them are pretty easy once you inoculate a medium of some kind, whether logs or mulch or whatever, to grow at home. And if people want to get started, like, what are some of the easy ones that you teach at first and that you're going to be covering in that, you know, morning talk class on May 11th when we get together for my open day?
Yeah, actually, I'm really excited that you brought the May 11th up, because the main mushrooms, some of the easiest mushrooms to grow and incorporate within your garden, are the ones we're going to be covering then.
Okay.
And that means we're going to be talking about how to grow shiitakes on logs. So certainly if people have sugar maples or oaks, you know, we can harvest some of these logs using forest management plan, of course. But if a tree comes down and you can kind of chop up the smaller pieces, you can take the logs and you're basically drilling holes in the logs and introducing that mycelium, which remembers the roots of the mushroom, to the log, which eventually grows through the log and fruits shiitake mushrooms.
Mm-hmm.
And these logs can be left outdoors in a shady area where it can get rained on. And within, it takes about a year for the mycelium to grow through that log and start fruiting mushrooms. But then that log will produce for about 3 to 4 years after that.
Wow.
So we're going to be talking about how to grow shiitake mushrooms on logs. We're also going to be talking about how to do Stropharia or wine cap.
Oh,
or
wine
the garden
caps.
Giant.
Yeah.
Yeah. The wonderful big burgundy mushrooms that, you know, have these beautiful veils and dark spore print, and they grow in mulch and in hay and are a really great companion plant that you can put right into your garden. Like, we always put straw or hay on our garden beds during the winter to really hold in the moisture and keep the temperatures regulated. And then we kind of move that straw aside and plant, you know, our plants in between. And then we consistently put straw on top of that and hay on top of that. And then we have raised beds at our garden.
Yes.
And in between our raised beds, we have mulch. And what's great about the Stropharia mycelium is that you can introduce it both through the hay and straw and the mulch. And it will run through the mulch, and it's really great for the straw, too. It helps break down the straw and create, you know, healthy soil for your plants, but it also attracts beneficial insects. It's really healthy for all different forms of nematodes and bacteria within your soils as well. So it really helps to add to the ecosystem within your garden and cultivate healthy soil. So it provides a really delicious mushroom.
Huh.
So really a very easy one to grow.
Now, you said spore prints. Now, that's another phrase, not a single word or phrase having to do with mushrooms. Spore prints. Mm-hmm. Can you explain that quickly, like what spore prints are?
Yeah, spore prints are great. It's every mushroom, and you can think of the mushroom as the fruiting body of a fungi, similar to an apple on an apple tree, where the apple is there to produce seeds to grow more apple trees, right?
Right.
Well, the mushroom is there to make spores, and spores are the seeds of the fungi, and they're microscopic, and they get released from the cap of the mushroom. If you take that typical-looking mushroom with the stem and a cap on top, the spores would be released from the underneath side of that cap, which sometimes has gills in a lot of the grocery store mushrooms and shiitakes and things like this that we buy.
Mm-hmm.
But if you find out what color those spores are, since these spores are microscopic, is that you can cut that stem off and put that cap, that top part of that mushroom, on a piece of construction paper or cardboard or a piece of glass, and overnight, the spores from that cap will drop onto the paper or cardboard or the glass, and then you can pick up that cap and see what color it is they leave behind. And this is one of the identifying characteristics of fungi.
Okay.
And so, yeah, taking spore prints can be a lot of fun because you can make a lot of art from them as well.
Huh.
And
cool.
Yeah,
so they leave their fingerprints behind. Right?
I love it. Yeah,
cool.
That's exactly right.
Oh,
that's like an island, too.
That's so interesting.
Really, yeah.
In May 11th, you're also going to, I think, in the morning class, you're going to do a hands-on take do-it-yourself and then take home your own sort of pre-made kit of an indoor growing type as well, yes?
Yes, that's right. We're going to be growing oyster mushrooms on coffee grounds.
Okay.
Which is a class that I teach for the New York Botanical Gardens and a few other places. And we have a really great time because we're upcycling a waste stream. You can imagine how many coffee shops there are around the world that are just taking their coffee grounds after they brew you a delicious cup and just tossing them in the garbage. Well, this is an opportunity to take those coffee grounds and take a little oyster mushroom mycelium and mix them together. And lo and behold, the oyster mushroom mycelium will start growing on the coffee grounds and fruiting edible mushrooms.
And like on your kitchen counter, is this what we...
Yeah, that's right. Well, yeah, you're not like jumping the coffee grounds on the kitchen.
Oh, sorry, John. No, you know me. I'm a terrible housekeeper. No.
I don't think that's very true at all.
No.
But yes, we put them in a to-go container, a little quart-sized container. You have your coffee grounds and your mycelium, and you can just leave it in your kitchen and mist it every couple days, and you'll see the mycelium run over those coffee grounds and turn those coffee grounds completely white until it's bound them all together in a thick mat before it pools its energy together and fruits a mushroom.
So in the last, we just have like 2 minutes or so left, but I wanted just to ask you, because I've been fascinated by it on your website for CatskillFungi.com, and at the events that we've done together, you do these tinctures, these concoctions of different mushrooms. What got you into that briefly?
Yeah, that was actually my trip to Ecuador studying micro-remediation. I took a class with somebody that was teaching about the medicinal properties of mushrooms. And they taught us how to do extracts of those medicinal properties.
Ah.
And when I got back, I had been making those for friends and family and myself for a while. And I realized that there was kind of a need within the community for local mushroom tinctures. And so I started producing them and selling them from mushrooms I was growing and mushrooms I was foraging. And I've had a lot of support from the community since.
Yeah, it's very interesting. And some, I think that in the fall you brought this, it kind of looked like a petrified thing. what is it? It starts with an S. What is it called? Chaga? Is that?
Yeah, chaga is a very interesting one. It grows on birch trees and hyperaccumulates betulin, which is really good for your immune system. And there's other cultures in Europe that use this as even an anti-cancer drug or one that goes along with cancer treatments. But it's really great for boosting the immune system, for skin digestion, and detoxing. So, each mushroom kind of has their own health benefits, similar to some plants. And they're quite fascinating. Everything from modulating blood pressure and the immune system to brain function to blood sugar. It's really...
Right, and they're great, used in traditional medicines in many cultures. Very, very interesting. Well,
yeah, that's right.
Well, so May 11th, I'm going to see you. We're going to have a class in the morning. We're going to have a mushroom walk in the afternoon. I'll give all the details. Plus, on your website, which I'll give the link to as well with the transcript, you've got lots of things going on elsewhere, some of which you alluded to, like New York Botanical Garden and so forth. So we'll give that information as well. I'm so glad to talk to you, John, and I look forward to seeing you soon. Talk to
Thanks.
You soon. Bye-bye.
Underwriting support from High Mowing Organic Seeds, the first independently owned farm-based seed company proudly serving organic gardeners and farmers with 100% organic and non-GMO vegetable, herb, and flower seeds. HighMowingSeeds.com/awaythegarden. Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes or Spotify. And find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or on Facebook and Instagram as @awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
Away to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.